Innovation and change is always ugly in the beginning.
I'd like to welcome Chris Kremitzos to the Productivityist Podcast. Chris, thanks for joining me today.
Mike, thank you for pronouncing my last name correctly. That's probably the first podcaster ever in history, I think.
I'm very, very attuned to that because I'll either get, first off, Productivityist is hard to say. A lot of people, you know, it's a hard one. But also I'll get, because of my last name being Vardy and my first name being Mike, I get a lot of, let's talk to Mark Vardy. And I'm like, okay, I get it, but Mike is the name. So I can totally appreciate it. You know, it's funny, as we were starting off this conversation, we kind of started the interview a little bit ugly. Skype was not playing nice with us, so it was a bit of an ugly get going, and it's actually fitting, considering the book we're going to talk about is your book, Start Ugly, A Timeless Tale About Innovation and Change. Maybe Skype, the people at Microsoft should be looking at this and seeing how they can maybe finish a lot neater, you know what I mean?
I 100% agree.
So tell me, you know, we had a chance to meet briefly at Traffic and Conversion. And then I think you were stuck around for Social Media Marketing World. This is back, we're talking back in 2017 or is it 2018? It was a couple years ago that we had a chance to meet.
Yeah. We were hanging out outside the halls and comparing notes.
Yes. And when I saw this book come up in my feed, and you know, we've kind of kept tabs on each other through the usual social channels, I thought, this is fascinating, because we often hear about starting strong. That's the kind of thing people like, the starting of things are very strong. Everyone's kind of, you know, they've got their plans in place. Sure, we hear the term start before you're ready and all that stuff, but I've never heard someone like not only use the term start ugly, but actually like saying, hey, this is how I started, and this is a good way to start. So can we dig into the whole premise of Start Ugly and why it's been such a powerful thing for you?
So just to give you a background and not to go all the way back, I've done 2,000 events for entrepreneurs and creatives. So we try all kinds of different methodologies to really get the point home. And I was really frustrated one day, this was a few years back, and out of frustration, I just told the audience to start ugly. And it was almost as if I cursed at them. I don't know if that makes sense, yeah. Where you're just so frustrated that you start ugly. And I almost felt guilty as I said it. And then people said, can you tell us more about that? As if it was a concept. And it was a concept. And I said, well, you know, I said, the way you're going to start is never going to be as perfect as where it's going to end up. So it's always going to be an ugly start. You just got to embrace it and do a minimal amount of research to get started. And it kind of became a thing for me, and it started moving the needle. So this wasn't something that I just like cooked up. I've tested it over the last few years, and I have had more transformational impact with those two words than anything else. And I'm someone that has taught Lean Six Sigma, Kaizen, all these different methodologies that I know of. But for the everyday person, something about the word start ugly allow them to break through the noise of perfectionism and fear and actually get started. So the book title resonates with a lot of people. The story inside the book is actually a short fictional story that conveys that message.
Yeah, I want to get to that, because I've talked to people. I mean, there's the 1 minute manager, there's the go giver, Josh Kaufman, who's been on the show, is How to Fight a Hydra. Why did you decide to take the tack of writing it as a parable of sorts?
Well, two things. I don't like telling people how to do something. So like everybody has a different process, you know, but there are some fundamental truths in this world, and starting ugly is a fundamental truth. So you, Mike Vardy, started ugly when you first started your podcast. It is not as polished as it is now, but you perfected along the way. So it's kind of a fundamental truth to life. Your start is always going to be ugly when you compare it to where you wind up, whatever, 6 months to a year later. So I like that part, but I didn't want to tell people like how to do it, because I think that's very personal, and they listen to podcasts like this to learn what might work for them, what works for you. So a parable, I thought, was a really good way to get the story across. And I really enjoyed Who Moved My Cheese, because it's so basic, it just makes sense. This is a little bit more sophisticated of a story, but it takes place in the early 1900s on a place called Manhattan Island. We know it as New York City now. But it deals with a gentleman who has a lumber mill, and an R&D laboratory. And basically, it's about an innovation that's about to eat his lunch that's right under his nose, but he doesn't see it coming, even though it was in his own laboratory.
I want to dig into the idea of change, because that's one of the central themes of the book. You know, you go, if you go to Amazon, the link will be in the show notes and all that stuff. You can kind of see some of the stuff that gets talked about there. Why? I mean, you talk about just now the Gregory, the businessman, not seeing it coming. When you're starting ugly, how adept does that help you when it comes to dealing with change and innovation? Because I think that that's something that people tend to get, especially as fast as technology and the world itself moves nowadays. Change can be a pretty scary thing. Does starting ugly help with the ability to deal with change? And if so, how?
It does. So two things. I get a lot of people that tell me, hey, Chris, I'm very successful, so I don't need this book. And I tell them, actually, the case study is about a very successful business person mm-hmm. who loses his way. So here's two, like when people hear Start Ugly, like, I've already started. It's really meant for not only the people that haven't begun something, but what happens in business, especially in today's day and age, if we're not actively starting ugly in different areas of the business will be obsolete very shortly. So you have to condition yourself to understand that even though you've made a certain level of success, you still need to be looking around the corner for things you should be testing on and starting ugly. And then I literally have one page in this book that is a 7-step guide to how to start ugly. Very simple. But the key is to not be afraid of starting. So one of the inspirations of this book, there's multiple, but one of them, I'm in a very successful group of CEOs, okay, to the point where one guy has 700 employees, the other guy literally is extremely successful in what he does. It touches everybody's life. And I remember being in the group, and I don't know, I had mentioned something like, yeah, one of my goals is private jet travel because I could save a lot of time having private jet travel. And for some people hearing that, they might be like, wow, that's really out there. And I remember in this group of successful people, they'll be like, that'll be the day. And I'm like, wow, here I am with really successful people that make millions of dollars a year in revenues with their businesses, and they have limiting beliefs just like anyone else. So for me, if you're not willing to start ugly, you actually cap your growth.
Can we go over some of those steps? Because I think that that's, I mean, as much as I want people to be able to read the book, I think, first off, let's talk about the one that... you've got 7 of them in there. What is the one that kind of people, maybe is the barrier for a lot of people where they get to it and they're like, I don't know.
I'll go over the steps because they're very simple.
Sure.
The one is step one, identify an opportunity, a new way of doing things. So that's very simple. You've identified something, you like it. For you, Mike, it might've been like, oh, I like this podcasting thing. Let me take a look at that. Two, research what you're getting into and set a time limit for the research. So I'm not telling people not to research. I'm just telling them set a time limit. Don't allow yourself to get bogged down trying to prepare for every eventuality. That is the perfectionist nightmare. That's what we, most of us try and do. There's no such thing as being prepared for every eventuality. Step three, create a minimal viable thing, whatever that is. Something you're proud to share with the world. Don't get stuck on perfection. Step four, commit to a launch date. Make it real and make it public by telling people. So put it on social media. Tell people that you're about to do that. And step five is start ugly and launch. So that's your launch date, is the day you start ugly. The key to this, Mike, is step six. It's after you've started ugly, there's step six is probably my favorite step in this. It's set check-in dates to assess. So you have A, if you determine you didn't like what you started, stop. Congrats. You don't have to think about it anymore. So it gives permission for people to stop. Ultimately, a lot of people see that as failure. I see the failure in spending time thinking about something for so long that you've wasted all that time. If you don't like something, you're allowed to stop. B, if you love what you're doing, right? This is step 6B, decide what your endeavor will become. New business, new division, side hustle, hobby, and set milestones accordingly. And then 7, create systems and work towards perfect execution of what you just started. So I always tell people, it's not start ugly, stay ugly. It's start ugly and perfectly execute along the way.
It's interesting because one of the things that I've been, and I'm past this point now, but there was a point where when I was doing the podcast that I thought, I've gotten comfortable. And I think comfort can lead to complacency. And I felt that I had to do something to kind of mix it up a bit. What role does comfort have when it comes to not only just starting something ugly, but maybe staying with something and realizing, like when you're assessing it, going, you know what, this is too comfortable now. How do I shake it up a bit?
So you... many, I'll be quite frank with you. Like in the book, we use the case study of Gregory Sharp. Many times, the point of the book is many times those answers are right underneath your nose. You just are not giving them any credence. So by thinking about starting ugly, the answers will appear because you're asking superior questions of like, hey, what do I need to start ugly? What is an area that I've been avoiding growing in that I need to look at? And then for, let's say if you're a business owner, if you're happy where you're at, that's great. All I would say to you is if you want to maintain, pay attention to the marketplace because we're living in a world that's changing faster than it ever has. So have good timing that if you're not willing to change, just be willing to sell before the market and the behaviors change. Because if you don't change with it, you won't have much left, really. We're moving that fast moving forward in the next few years, especially with quantum computing on the horizon.
What about the people who are listening to this right now? And they're going, this all sounds well and good, but it sounds a lot like you're kind of forging a path that you have no idea what's going down and there's a lot of risk involved. What do you say to those people?
Well, in this, it has a step, and the step says, prepare, do your research and prepare. So you want to minimize your risk, but you also want to start ugly. I'll be quite honest with you, Mike, most times we waste time on really silly things mm-hmm. that don't have a lot of risk, but in our mind, we think they do. And we're much better off getting started. So if, for instance, you're doing a tech startup and it requires a lot of money, figure out where you're comfortable minimizing the risk and then move forward. Otherwise, that idea might not be one that's suitable to you if the risk is too high. Then find out. In this book, I have a brother-in-law that talked to me last year during the holidays, this almost same time, telling me how he wanted to create his own microbrew beer. And I said to him, you know, you probably wasted more time thinking about it than doing it. And he had this excuse that it was very expensive. It's only $100 to start your own microbrew, but he just didn't do the research. He said to me, Chris, you know what? You're right. I go, in what way? He goes, I've been thinking about brewing my own beer for 8 years. So sometimes it's just these little things that you've been thinking about that you probably could have done. You're just giving yourself different excuses, telling yourself why you're not doing them.
That actually leads nicely into my next question. I mean, you've got a family, you've got, there's that personal component that comes into it that can kind of throw us for a loop when we're thinking about starting something ugly or starting something in general, something that you're like, hey, there is some risk here. I've done my research. How have you, and I'm going to bring it to you rather than to the, taken that into account when you've been putting together your ventures? Because I mean, that's got to play a part in it somehow.
So I just make sure that I have enough money to take care of my family, put into our investments that'll take care, because we're entrepreneurs, so we have to, like, put it this way, the money that we put away monthly for our different policies that'll take care of me and my family are sacred, like they don't get touched. So I will then allocate anything and above and beyond that my businesses generate towards a start ugly endeavor. So recently with PodFest, we started Indie Podcast News, which is a division to create news for the industry for independents. I was able to allocate a budget towards that to hire someone to be the editor in chief of that. So that's a side project. That's a start ugly. I'll give it a year of runway to see where it goes. To be quite honest with you, if you go to the website, it looks beautiful, but we don't even have about us page, a contact page up. We don't have events, like all that will come later, but we do have the core, which is really well-written articles with a really nice visual. And I will then build around it from now till, going into next year.
Let's talk about PodFest a bit. We'll shift gears a little bit. When you think about PodFest, has been around for how long now?
6 years.
Okay. So there's podcasting has become a more powerful and more known medium over the years. I mean, especially since you started. What do you see in terms of, and since we're on a podcast, we might as well talk about this, the idea of there's a lot more events, both small and big. You know, there's podcast movement, there's several others. What do you think, like, what do you see coming down the line in terms of podcasting? Like, how does that medium look to you? Because we've seen, Adam Curry was a guy who, back when I'm using my Rodecaster Pro right now, and I remember the Kickstarter campaign or Indiegogo campaign from years ago that was going to do something, obviously not quite as robust as what Rode did, but that idea was there. So there's probably been a lot of kernels of ideas that haven't come to light yet, or life yet, rather, when it comes to the podcasting industry. What are you seeing as somebody who's built an event and is on kind of that track? What do you see coming down the line?
So you're going to see a lot of niches growing into their own subcultures. So, for instance, for PodFest, we're growing with the audience. So instead of being a general conference, we're actually hosting a lot of niche conferences at PodFest. Sports PodCon for the sports podcaster and esports person. We're featuring, Podcast Editor Con for the editors, as well as Audio Drama Con. So in the world of audio, if we're to look into the future, virtual intelligence, artificial intelligence, whatever you want to call it, is going to play a huge thing in that we're going to be talking to our devices more. We're listening more than ever. So you see like Audible now, I think it has overtaken actually reading physical books. People are listening. So the audio habits of all of us are developing and increasing, and our appetite is increasing. So I know a lot of us, like you've been in the game for a while, so have I. We almost think that, oh my God, how much can it get? I think we're still at the beginning of the curve. You're going to see a lot more people because people are still listening to radio, which is an outdated modality if you think about the robustness of on-demand audio whenever you want it, how you want it. So until the general population shifts, what we'll see is the money is shifting over the next 2 to 3 years. Podcasting revenue will hit $1 billion probably by the end of 2021. As that happens, over the next 2-3 years after that, it's going to seesaw. And then I would just say pay attention to artificial intelligence things like Alexa, Google Mini. They're getting a lot smarter, a lot quicker, and they're serving up a lot of information. And you're just going to see a lot more. What we see now is probably only going to be 10% of what will exist in the next 4 to 5 years.
Okay, we're going to take a break from the conversation for a moment, but when we come back, I'm going to ask Chris how he's able to handle writing the book that he wrote and everything else that he's got going on in his busy life. We're going to talk about also some of the biases that he's come across and realized that some of those biases have been helped by this book, and also the importance of being nimble and what Chris thinks about that phrase. But I want to talk about how you can become more nimble with your career, and you can do that through the UCI Division of Continuing Education. The UCI Division of Continuing Education has courses and certifications in a wide range of categories. There are online courses that are taught by expert instructors, so you don't even need to be in Orange County, and they have industry experience as well. You know, continuing education is a great way to stay abreast of developments and best practices in your field. There are those certificate programs that the UCI Division of Continuing Education offers that give you best practices and teach the most relevant practical skills, which is what you're going to need to level up and be nimble. There are certificate programs and specialized studies programs available, and they offer an in-depth body of knowledge to ensure you gain mastery of a particular topic. Specialized studies feature shorter, more concentrated curricula for those that are short on time, and both are distinctive achievements that can help prepare you for a career advancement or transition. In fact, you can advance your career in as little as 6 months. Now, spring registration is open. So you need to go to ce.uci.edu/productivityist and then enter the promo code TIMECRAFTING to get 15% off of one course. Now, the discount is available for almost all of the certificate programs. The exceptions only include coding boot camps, international programs, teacher credentialing programs, and test prep scores. But that 15% discount applies to everything else. So go to ce.uci.edu/productivityist and enter the promo code TIMECRAFTING to get 15% off of one course. Now, this offer is valid until July 31st, 2020 at 11:59 p.m. So take action now. Register for your discounted program today. It's time for a little bit of shameless self-promotion here, and it's my call to you to subscribe to the podcast if you're not already a subscriber. We have a ton of great guests coming down the pipeline. We've got Michael Hyatt coming up. We've got John Suratsky coming up. Courtney Carver coming up. I have shows planned all the way until summer 2020. And most of those interviews have already been recorded. So I know what's coming up and I would love for you to be part of it. Subscribe to the podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, wherever you are listening to this program. I'd love to take you on this adventure with me. This podcast has been going on for a number of years and it's going to keep going strong. I'd love for you to be part of that journey. Again, subscribe to the Productivity Podcast today. Before we get back to the conversation, I want to share with you my Productivityist podcast pick of the week, and it's The Good Life Project by Jonathan Fields. Now, I have the pleasure of meeting Jonathan on a few occasions at several conferences, and what I love about this program is, I mean, there's a lot of podcasts out there that are in personal development and business and all that stuff, and Jonathan's podcast is just different. He's a really good interviewer. I love his voice. I love how thoughtful and intentional he is. In fact, he gave a talk at... I want to say it was at World Domination Summit about meta attention. I really need to get him on this program, actually, because I'd love to talk to him about that. But who he's talked to are people like Ben Folds, who's one of my favorite musicians. Fun fact, I was a member of the Ben Folds fan club and got to go see him at the Paramount with tickets that were really close to the stage. And I've seen him another time in Toronto, where the reggae artist Snow, of all things, came up and performed Informer with him. So Thomas Sadowski, who is on the program Life in Pieces, but also part of The Newsroom, which was the show that was the Aaron Sorkin show. Other ones like, you know, Austin Kleon, who's been on this program, Liz Phair. He's just got a really great variety of guests that you might not expect. And they're all living a good life. The idea of inspirational, intimate, and disarmingly unfiltered conversations is what the Good Life Project is all about. And I encourage you to give it a listen. It's my Productivityist podcast pick of the week. Now let's get back to my conversation with Chris Kremitzos here on the Productivityist podcast. I want to talk now about, you know, I want to shift back a little bit towards the book, but more about you and the practice of I mean, you've got a lot going on, and putting this book together, you know, I mean, it's a parable. So it's a story, right? With obviously lessons inside of it. And you've got a busy family life. So I'm looking at all these things together and going, how in the world did you make time to do all of that? Like, how do you, with all of the ventures you've got going, what does that, like, how are you able to kind of handle all of those things?
So one of my strong suits in business is knowing my weaknesses and knowing my strengths. My strengths are being with people and brokering synergies. You know, you would call, some people would call it deal making or figuring out the win-win. So that's my strength, and I help a lot of people. So anyone that contacts me, I will take the call. I don't care what it is. I don't take sales calls anymore because a lot of people call trying to sell you stuff 24/7. But it, like, if people need help, right, I'll take the call. Even if it's something that I charge for, I'll give them 20 to 30 minutes of my time. I'll direct them to where they could get help. Now, what does that mean? Because I focus on my strengths, I have a lot of team players that I've helped through my strengths that then help me on my weaknesses. So operationally, I have Allie, who is my head of operations. She puts in systems because that is not one of my strong suits. Mm. My wife, who you've met, she runs and lives in systems. So she'll allocate a little bit of extra time, not a lot, but to help kind of smooth me out when I need to be organized. So I have team members that take care of everything. And I used to have a heavy employee base. What I do now is I use mostly contractors.
Right.
But I've known these contractors for years. The reason why that's really good is it's very efficient. And if a contractor doesn't work, it's very easy to replace that contractor for another. So that helps me in the speed of implementation. So those are kind of how I roll. So with the book, the team I had for the book was very simple. I had a friend who's a publisher. And I got stuck like everybody else. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. He said to me, you focus on the why, I'll focus on the how. And what he did, and I recommend anyone, if you have anyone that could fill this gap, he said, when you're ready to publish, you're going to send me the manuscript and I'm going to walk you step by step. All you have to do is follow the step that's in front of you. And we were able to get it done very quickly with that methodology. I did pay him and it was well worth every penny. His name is Gabe Aloisi with the Private Club Agency, and he has a publishing arm. So that was well worth the money. Writing the book only took me 2 hours. I visualized it and then I wrote it. So I'm a visual learner. So I visualized what these characters would say to each other and then I wrote it down. But we did do 20 drafts. So that's where most of the process was, in the revision and editing process.
You talked about, you know, help, and this is something that I think a lot of people struggle with, is either figuring out where to ask for help, how to ask for help, what to get help with. And you, the one thing you brought up is contractors. And I'm as someone who worked for Costco for years, one of the business kind of mottos for Costco was to be nimble. And this leads back to the book too. How important is being nimble to you? And what lessons can people, where should people be looking at embracing being nimble, especially in these agents' era of rapid change?
I cannot recommend being nimble enough. So how to be nimble is, if you have a block about using virtual assistants or going up on Upwork and finding someone, what I would tell you is start ugly and try it out and do it as an experiment, hoping to fail. And I guarantee you, you will find the exact person you need. So for instance, my director of operations is virtual. She's out of Utah, but I use a service that went through thousands of people to find me the right fit. I can't do that locally. I'm leveraged to a very small pool of people. They were able to find me a cultural fit in another state using a service that goes through thousands of people and then picks the top tier candidates. So, it is the nimbleness that I'm getting, because let's say this doesn't work. I have an agency that could then replace that person within a month. And I hate saying this, but I'm very loyal to my people. But in today's day and age, you have to get the work done. If you don't, you have to replace that player with mm-hmm. someone that can. And it's extremely important and cost effective as well.
Well, and not only that, but in a situation where maybe something doesn't work, and I've come across this where something doesn't work, you're like, oh, if you've got a team of employees and something doesn't land the way, and they're reliant on you to that degree as the only real thing that you've got going on, and it can create some uncomfortable aroundness and can actually keep you from, you know, moving forward with some of those maybe higher risk ventures or the things that you really want to do, because you're like, okay, well, I've got these people that are, you know, they're relying on me, right?
I've had that where I couldn't make payroll, and I cannot tell you how stressful and how upsetting it is that you don't have money to pay your crew. For me, I was very lucky early on. I was young, and the people I had were very loyal. They stayed with me for 3 months without getting paid, and I asked them to leave multiple times. And they were so locked in the vision, we were able to make it through, and they helped me make it through. And then we were able to make back payroll and pay everybody back. But it's just very stressful. So if you want to have, there's other options now, much better. Mm-hmm. Like I use virtual professionals, Mike, because I pay a premium.
Right.
So I'll pay, a lot of people will have, there's different ways to use, but if someone's working alongside me, day in, day out, they're virtual professional, and I'll pay up to $40 an hour for different tasks. So, you know, it doesn't, just because it's virtual doesn't mean it's low cost. You could get a very high level person depending on what premium you're willing to pay. And it's still a fraction of what I'd pay if I had a full-time person working alongside me.
That's actually bringing up a really interesting thought around biases, because a lot of people, there's an example, a lot of people think virtual assistant, oh, that's cheap, right? They overseas. They think, I mean, that's kind of what's in the zeitgeist, to agree, which, and I agree with you, there's lots of different options out there. And you're right. Not all of them are going to be that, you know, overseas kind of inexpensive option. That's going to, you know, cause a lot of people go to that when they're like, hey, you know what? I want to have help, but I don't have a lot of money. What are some of the other biases that you've come across, especially as you've put this book out there? You've talked to people about the book that you've either realized or recognized that, hey, this is a bias that this book has helped break. And maybe some of the ones that you didn't think would be broken or challenged by the book and even in your own life.
Well, here's a really good one. I had a surgeon in a room once, and I remember they said to me, listen, I have a really hard time with this start ugly thing. I go, why is that? He goes, well, I'm a surgeon. Because we can't start ugly on people, right? So I was like, oh, this is a good one, Mike. I was like, how do I address this, right? Luckily, this was a friend of mine, so it wasn't one of those, like, I'm going to challenge you in front of the room. He was just openly expressing this, right? And I said to him, let me ask you something. You do procedures. He goes, yeah. I go, how did they start? And you could see the light bulb go off. I go, they had to start ugly somewhere, right? And he goes, yeah, actually, they were very experimental when they started. So innovation and change is always ugly in the beginning. Doesn't matter how whether it's the most perfect surgery that you have now, had to start ugly somewhere. Someone had to test it on something or someone. So that was an interesting one. I had another one where, ironically enough, it was a chiropractor, And he started shaking his head as I read the seven steps I read you. And I went up to him after. I said, out of curiosity, you seem to have a really deep reaction on what I was saying. He goes, I'm a chiropractor. I do very well for myself. I have three. He had three practices in the city. He said, but I just started this new line of CBD products. Mm. And he goes, I'm making a lot of money from them. And I'm thinking to myself, what's the problem? He goes, I just don't enjoy selling them. He goes, it's just not something I like doing. He goes, your step six, I had in step six, if you remember, I said, if you determine you don't like what you started, stop. Congrats. You don't have to think about it anymore. He said to me, that freed me up to stop. So in the American, North American, but this is a very American thing. If you're succeeding in something and you stop, we label you as a failure.
Right.
So that little step gave him like the okay to stop. Like he's not a failure. It just, he doesn't like doing it. So why keep doing it if you want to focus on something else? So that was an interesting point of view.
That's true. There are a lot of biases around in that. Like, you know, the idea of but conversely, and I guess this is something that I want to touch on, is that you can learn from failure too, right? So it's all perspective, I think, a lot of this stuff, right? Where if you look at it from that perspective, but that said, yeah, if you don't like doing something, and you stop doing it, you're especially if you put it out there, you're gonna get that. I think you're gonna get that no matter what. I think it's making choices around what to listen to, right?
Yeah, and I would reframe the word failure. Mm-hmm. The failure, the true failure, is thinking about something and wasting so much energy and time and never doing anything about it. So I'll give you an example.
Sure.
I like birds. We actually have two or three birds. Like parrots, birds. Mm-hmm. Like I have encyclopedias about birds. And I thought at one point I wanted to breed birds. I went down that rabbit hole and I decided that's not what my life, it's not my highest and best use. I know it sounds funny, right? But it's true. I was like, so I didn't fail. I went to the bird shows. I was like, okay, well, that's not what I want to do. I'd rather have a sanctuary and then maybe have one or two as a hobby, right?
Right.
So I was able to reclassify something that was, I would say, somewhat of an obsession for me. And my wife always says this. Katie's really good at this. I failed at so many things. She goes, you really haven't. She goes, I wouldn't call it failure because I don't even act like it's a failure because it's not. She goes, you just try different things and you decide what you like or what you don't like. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what, Katie? That's a really good way of putting it. And I think we have to just look at us. We're trying what we like and what we don't like. And unfortunately, in this world, a lot of people don't know what they like. And what happens is other people's agendas become their agendas because they don't know what they haven't tried yet. So they have to find their direction. So Start Ugly is a way of stripping you of all your what ifs. So at the end of your life, you said, hey, I did it. And I learned what I like and what I didn't like. And that, it's a very simple philosophy, but it's very fundamental to a well-lived life.
Chris, this has been a great conversation. I want to thank you for taking the time today. Where can people keep up with you and your work and also get a copy of this book?
So for the book, it's on Amazon, juststartugly.com. For me, if you go to chriskremitzos.com, and even if you don't spell it right, I'm sure Google will find my website for you. It shows you everything that I'm up to. So my core, I've had to ask myself, what do I do in life? My core is to amplify and help other people be the best versions of themselves through their creative endeavors. So I do that through PodFest, through my book, and through anything that I put out there. So that's really my mission in life.
Chris, thanks again for joining me on the Productivities Podcast.
Thanks, Mike. This was awesome.